College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
It's Heisman week, and on Saturday night on ESPN, all eyes will be on the four very best in college football, Justin Fields, Chase Young, Jalen Hurts, and the heavy favorite, Joe Burrow, who cleaned up at the Home Depot College Football Awards on Thursday night. And think about this, in an offseason where Trevor Lawrence and Tua Tagovailoa were expected to battle for this award, and Jonathan Taylor was considered the top running back, in New York this weekend, we have three transfer quarterbacks who found the perfect fit and a once-in-a-generation dominant defensive end. And we're going to get Ivan Maizel's thoughts on how this all played out. But first, it's my pleasure to bring in the 1991 Heisman winner and a teammate of ours here at ESPN, Game Day's Desmond Howard. Des, it's been 28 years, and I'm not trying to make us feel old, but it feels like that's flown by. What's this week like for you when you look back?
Well, I tell you what, Kev, it was such an exciting time in my life. It was a great moment, you know, not only for me, but for my family and for those who have supported me throughout the years. And then for the University of Michigan, too, because they hadn't had a Heisman winner since Tom Harmon. So it was a great time, a wonderful time in my college career, the best moment I think any college football player can have outside of winning a national championship. And it's more than an individual award. I mean, we can get into that later on, but it was really a special moment because for my campaign, you know, I pretty much came out of nowhere. And to be a guy who, I guess, was kind of like Joe Burrow. I mean, Joe Burrow wasn't on anyone's Heisman watch list at the beginning of the 2019 season. I mean, like you said, it was about Trevor Lawrence. It was about Tua and other players, other high-profile, well-known players. So to not even have your name on the watch list, so to say, and then at the end be the overwhelming favorite to win, and win probably, I'm assuming this young man should win by a huge margin, is just a tremendous testament to the type of season that I had that year in 1991 and the year that Joe Burrow has had in 2019.
Well, when you won, you captured 85% of the first place votes in the ballots for the Heisman, and that's the largest margin in history at the time, back in 1991. And then Troy Smith is now the holder. He won in 2006. He holds the record at 91.6%. The first place votes. Do you think Burrow is going to break that record on Saturday night?
Kevin, I do. And for two reasons. For one, he's been consistent. Even though he wasn't the front runner or a big name at the beginning of the season, he became a prominent college football quarterback with a huge name early in the season when they played Texas. They went to Austin and played the Longhorns on the road. And this is when Texas was pretty much at full strength. They felt as though their secondary was the best in all of college football. So we had the back and forth between LSU and Texas about which school is DBU, meaning they had the best defensive back. Mm-hmm. So they went to Austin playing a very confident LSU, Texas Longhorns team, and just dismantled that secondary. Joe Burrow had a magnificent game. And so did Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, who actually walked away with the Biletnikoff Award last night. Ja'Marr Chase did. So, then for him to continue that same level of play all the way to the SEC championship game against Georgia, which is pretty much in their own backyard. That game was in Atlanta. And to just be as consistent as he was this season is just going to help him. And then the number two factor, Kev, is that he didn't have – I don't think there was a number two or a second candidate who played as well throughout the season for the same stretch of time that Joe did. And I thought that had Ohio State chosen to push Justin Fields, as opposed to the way they pushed Chase Young, the defensive end, then I think it would have been a much closer race he would have had, because I think Justin Fields would probably got more first-place votes. Because if you look at Chase Young, I mean, He's a defensive player, so the odds are stacked against you right there. As phenomenal as he is, he's still a defensive player. The odds are stacked against you. And then you got to really have an impact on games, and then very meaningful games too down the stretch, which he didn't. And then the fact that he got himself suspended for 2 games for violating NCAA rules, that doesn't help his case either. So had they decided to push Justin Fields, it seemed like they still wanted to push Chase Young for the Heisman, even after he got suspended for violating NCAA rules, which is just mind-boggling to me. They have a guy who is having a phenomenal season at the quarterback position, Justin Fields. He's a guy who at one point had them as the number one team in the nation. I mean, you check all these boxes, you say, okay, this is going to be the guy we're going to push because he has the strongest chance of winning the award. Had they pushed Justin Fields, I think the race would have been closer. So because of those two factors, Kev, I think that Joe Burrow has the opportunity to break that record that you spoke of for Troy Smith.
Dez, you bring up a very interesting point because I think any other year, when you look at Justin Fields' numbers, he's responsible for 50 touchdowns and he throws one pick. And
one
I think
pick,
any
Kev,
other year he wins.
That's
right?
Mind-blowing. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And then also when you talk about the talent at Ohio State on both sides. So when you look at their biggest win this season, right? The Wisconsin game in the regular season, it's Chase Young and what he did in the backfield with the 4.5 sacks, right? It's Michigan's win and what J.K. Dobbins did, over 200 yards on the ground and 4 touchdowns. So it's not so much a knock on anybody. It's just that Justin Fields is surrounded by supreme talent. LSU is as well. But the talent that he's surrounded by had the biggest games, and it wasn't just Joe Burrow standing out against Bama and Auburn. It was a ton of guys standing out for Ohio State in the biggest games. And that's what it comes down to, right? The perception of where's your Heisman moment, right? And I don't think Justin Fields had a Heisman moment except, you know, when he's dinged up, comes back against Michigan, rolls out on his first play with that knee brace, and then throws a 30-yard touchdown pass, right? Aside from that, we didn't have a Justin Fields moment all season long, right?
Well, I think that the Michigan play is one, and you want to have it in that game. So you don't have to have, like, multiple ones, especially in meaningless games. You want to have a big one in a big game. Because in my opinion, I'm watching the LSU game, and they played Alabama. And I remember watching the broadcast, and then after the game, if you remember, like, Joe Burrow had a nice run. It was a really nice run at a crucial time of the game, late in the game, when LSU needed it, and it picked up a first down. But then after that run, Clyde Edwards-Helaire had actually scored the touchdown to, like, try to put some distance between LSU and Alabama. I remember after the game, the announcers asked Joe Burrow, was that run that all he did was pick up a first down? You know, it wasn't all that sensational. It was okay. Was that your Heisman moment? And I remember thinking, okay, now these guys are really trying to push to find a Heisman moment when this guy's clearly the front runner. But against Georgia in the SEC championship game, when he scrambled, he did a couple of spinning moves and then he scrambled and rolled to his right and threw the ball across the field to Justin Jefferson, like that's more of like a Heisman type of highlight, which you can, you know, coin a Heisman moment. SEC championship game, a big play. It was incredible. He got out of like 2 or 3 sacks. I get it. In my opinion, when Justin Fields came back in the game with the knee brace against Michigan, when everyone was thinking, oh, man, what are the Buckeyes going to do now? They got this kid in here, quarterback we never heard of, on the road, blah, blah, blah. Here comes Justin Fields out the tent, big knee brace on his leg, but he comes out, throws a pinpoint accurate touchdown down the field. Boom. Yeah, I mean, you only need one or two of those moments, and I think that could have potentially been his moment had Ohio State been pushing for this young man to win the Heisman as opposed to Chase Young, who's a guy who you didn't hear his name called in that Michigan game. You know what I mean? So, and this is, like I said, this guy got himself suspended for 2 games, too, for violating NCAA rules. It just baffles me that you wouldn't push this guy whose numbers are phenomenal. He's an incredible player. Yeah, he has great talent around him. J.K. Dobbins, was up for the Doak Award last night because he's one of the top running backs in the country. But at the end of the day, if I'm, you know, the SID or I'm the AD, and I say, listen, we got a chance for one guy to win this thing, I think the odds are in the favor of the quarterback, not the defensive end who got himself suspended for two games.
Yeah, and Fields in that Michigan game, he finished with four touchdowns, over 300 yards. So I imagine then next season, the entire offseason leading into next season will be about Justin Fields versus Trevor Lawrence for the Heisman. We're going to hear the onslaught. Exactly. Yeah. Again, any other year, I think Justin Fields wins this. When you look at the numbers, they're staggering. And you're leading a team that is number one for the most part of the playoff rankings.
Right.
It's pretty crazy that we're going to have potentially a landslide on Saturday night. What was the New York experience like for you? Because again, four guys, four kids. We often forget they're 18 to 23 years old. They're going to be in this environment. What was it like for you back in the early 90s for you to go to New York?
Yeah, it was crazy, man. I tell you what, it was wild. It was a fantastic time. Unlike today, where you will see these kids bring like an entourage, or at least bring their parents and maybe their siblings. Like, I was up there with just my SID, a guy named Bruce Mahdi, and that was it. Even my head coach, Gary Moeller, he wasn't even in attendance. He wasn't even there. So it was just me and Bruce, and I had a fantastic time. Now, my family came the next day. You know, they were able to come Sunday. I believe the story was the previous year, someone was supposed to win it, and they didn't win it, and the family wasn't happy about that. So they had, like, not allowed families to come after that.
Really?
Yeah, that's what the story was. So, you know, that's what I heard. So anyway, man, my family wasn't with me, but, you know, they were, you know, they showed them via satellite when the announcement was made, which was still pretty special just to see my parents and their reaction. That was priceless. But, you know, you get up there. I remember I had to still do, like, a lot of media. They had this thing called the Bob Hope All-American Team, and I had to go to a studio and do something for that because I couldn't be where those people were, where those players were at that time. But they made it a very fun weekend. It was great to get to – I'll tell you what, Kev, the other thing is you get to know, like, some of the finalists, you know, some guys who you may have played against. Like, I played against Casey Weldon. Casey Weldon was up for the award, too. He was a Florida State's quarterback. Ty Detmer was there. Steve Entman from Washington, he was there. So you get to know these other guys who, outside of that weekend, you would not have any interaction with them. So that was pretty fun, too, to experience it with those guys, talk about your similar college experiences and talk about games and things of that nature. So that made it fun, too.
And by the way, 1990, Ty Detmer won the Heisman, and the guy who finished second just got inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame, Rocket Ismail. He finished second in the voting there, of course, for Notre Dame. And, you know, a year later, we see you doing what you did. And you gave us the Heisman moment, I think, that everybody points to, where it was like, that's the thing. That's the moment. And obviously the call from Keith Jackson where he goes, hello, Heisman. I know you've talked about it repeatedly, but I kind of want to hear your personal experience on that punt return against Ohio State. You're an Ohio kid. You do this great run. Now you're in the end zone. And did I hear correctly? You were thinking about doing a backflip?
Absolutely. So check this out, Kev. So here's the backstory. So here I am dating this gymnast, right? I'm dating a girl who's a gymnast at Michigan. And I'm like, I need you to teach me how to do a backflip. And this is going to sound strange. This is crazy. But she's like, are you serious? Like, yeah, I just want to learn how to do a backflip. So we would spend a lot of time, like, just, you know, going through, you know, the steps, the different steps and learning how to do a backflip. She never knew what my whole motive was. She didn't know, you know, what I was planning. But I always thought it would be the coolest thing just to do a backflip into the end zone. And not, you know, don't forget now, I didn't go into the season as a Heisman candidate. I just thought, hey, if I ever get an opportunity to be out in the open space and I have time, I think it'll be the coolest thing to do a backflip in the end zone. And that was as far as that thought process went. That was it. So I just wanted to score a touchdown one day and do a backflip in the end zone. So anyway, so she taught me how to do a backflip. I like, cool. And I'm kind of comfortable doing the backflip. I you know, I'm good. Here we are now. Like you said, I was born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio. So I'm fully aware of this Michigan versus Ohio State being the biggest rivalry in all of sports. So now I'm the front runner for the Heisman, especially going into this Ohio State game. During the season, I had a couple of my teammates that would say, hey, man, you got to do something when you get in the end zone. You got to do something. I mean, because you're the front runner. I mean, because, Kev, that whole season, every touchdown I scored, I did the Barry Sanders, which means I just handed the ball to the official. I turned around and celebrated with my teammates every single time. That's what I did.
You acted like you were there before. Yep.
Exactly. Absolutely. So I said, man, here we go now. It's the last game of the season. It's the biggest rivalry in college football. It's not all sports. I'm from Cleveland. I said, I have to do something if I get in the zone today. Something's got to give. It's the last game. So here I am now, very, very frustrated because Ohio State, they just made a conscious effort. It was clear as day. It was clear as crystal that they made sure they did not want Desmond Howard to score a touchdown that day. Like, they played their safeties so deep, it was like they were back there getting ready to catch punt. Okay? So their whole defense was set up not to let me score a touchdown. So I'm playing, I'm making catches, but I'm kind of frustrated. So here I am now. They're about to punt the ball, and they're, you know, close to midfield or whatever. And the general rule of thumb for a punt returner is if the team is punting anywhere near midfield and you're around your 10-yard line, put your heels on the 10-yard line, and you never retreat. Because at that point, if the ball looks like it's going over your head, let it go over your head, and hopefully it'll bounce in the end zone, and then the offense will start at the 20-yard line. You know, so that's the general rule of thumb. So here I am, heels on the 10, frustrated. I can't get a big playoff. I'm kind of mad. And the ball's going over my head. And now I got a decision to make, Kev. I'm like, okay. Do I let this thing go over my head? Do I catch it? It doesn't look like it's going far over my head, but it's obvious. In order to catch this ball, I have to retreat at least a step and a half or two. So I say, you know what? The hell with it. I'm going to step back and catch this thing. So I step back. Yeah, man, I'm a competitor, man. This is my moment. I'm not getting many opportunities. So I got to take the ones I get and take full advantage of them. So I step back, Kev, and I catch the ball. I'm like, okay, now I have to make something happen. At the very least, I better get to the 21-yard line, or Coach Mola's going to be pissed off. You know what I mean? So now I'm vested. I got to make something happen. So I make the first wave of tacklers miss with a little quick move to my right and then split them and go up the middle. And then I see another wave, so I make a move again, and I break out to the left, which is Ohio State's sideline, and I see Ohio State's punter. So now, as I see their punter, he's probably about, I don't know, 9 to 11 yards ahead of me, but there's no way I'm about to erase this angle. There's no way he's going to catch me. So I'm thinking, am I going to do this backflip? And at this time, Kev, I'm running down the Buckeyes sideline, and I'm thinking, going back and forth, am I going to do it? Yeah, do it. It'd be cool. Nah, don't do it. If you mess up, you'll be on SportsCenter for the wrong thing. I'm going back and forth about whether I'm going to do this backflip in the end zone or not. So as I get inside, probably I would say maybe inside the 5-yard line, I said, I chickened out. I got equipment on. I don't know if I ever did it with my shoulder pads and helmet on before. So let me just do this. And I just spontaneously struck that pose, which, you know, has taken on a life of its own. So that's exactly how that pose unfolded. You know, it was spontaneous. I had never practiced it before, but it was just something to do to capture that moment, which I thought was special because I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. We're playing the Buckeyes, and it's such a huge rivalry.
It's perfect. I mean, obviously, you don't know what the broadcast call is with Keith Jackson saying goodbye and then moments later saying hello Heisman in the pose right there. Like it was perfectly orchestrated and it comes together as one of those defining moments in all of college football. Since then, on a daily basis, do you just walk around? I'm talking about hotels, airports, car rental places, on game day sets on campus. And do just people just come up to you and just do the pose?
Yeah. Oh man, it's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. It's the weirdest thing. And I'm not a guy who has his phone out all the time and trying to like, you know, film everything. But if I was one of those guys who just like filmed or took a picture every time someone did a pose and like, and you know, we've had all people from all walks of life do it too, from entertainers to politicians to presidents. You know, it would be a hell of a collage of people doing that pose if I was that type of guy, because I get it everywhere. And it's always a pleasure to see too.
And I mentioned this, we started the podcast where, you know, the focus for Saturday night will be, of course, on the four young men. But again, three of them are transfer quarterbacks and they found the right places for them through the transfer portal. You came to Michigan as a tailback and I heard there was a fight for some playing time and you thought about transferring. If there was a transfer portal like there is today back then, would you have transferred out?
Wow. Well, yeah. Well, that's a very interesting, it's an interesting story because what happened was, like you're correct. So I was a tailback in high school, very, very successful high school. We were nationally ranked in the USA Today. And I also played defensive back. I played safety. I led the state in interceptions. So when I got to Michigan, back then, the freshmen reported before the upperclassmen. And the freshmen had like 3 days of camp just to get you acclimated to everything. So you're going to understand how everything works, all the moving parts. So we had 3 days of camp just by ourselves before the upperclassmen arrived. And the first day of camp, I actually played defensive back. Like I said, I led state interceptions. I played DB. The second day, I played wide receiver. The third day, I played running back. And no, I'm sorry. The second day I played running back, the third day I played wide receiver. And back then, Michigan had three upperclassmen who were wideouts who were on their way out. A guy named Chris Callaway, who was from Chicago. A guy named Greg McMurtry, who was from Massachusetts. And then another kid named John Colasar, who was actually from outside of Cleveland, Ohio. And those three guys were upperclassmen. They were on their way out. So after 3 days of freshman camp, Bo Schembechler, head coach, Gary Moeller, offensive coordinator, and Cam Cameron, wide receivers coach, called me in the meeting room and sat me down and said, listen, we think you can help the team faster and more effectively at wideout. And, you know, so I'm like, listen to this. I'm like, okay. And they tell me how Colasar and McMurtry and Callaway, they're on their way out. And I can learn from them and blah, blah, blah. And I was a team guy. And I wasn't like, okay, it's like the bait and switch. You guys recruited me and come up here and now you're going to switch my position. That's not how I felt at all. They said that if Bo Schembechler looked me in the eye and said, I think you can help our team faster and more effectively at wideout, and then listed all the reasons why, done deal, coach. I'll be in a receivers meeting tomorrow morning, no problem. But it was a hard transition, and that's when I decided I got very frustrated. I was like, you know, you're a young man, still a teenager, and things are a little more complicated now and a little more difficult than you anticipated. And I'm trying to make that transition, but there's a struggle. And because of that struggle, I became very frustrated. I used to butt heads with Cam Cameron, who was a wideouts coach at that point. And that's when I said, man, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe I should get out of here and consider transferring. And I tell you what, I had a mentor named Greg Harden, who was like a godsend because he was the one who really helped me focus on what I was up against and what I could do to change my situation, because it's not all in their hands. You have more power than you give yourself credit for, but you just have to recognize it and then figure out how to utilize it. And so anyway, so Greg Harden really helped me understand the situation. And that's why I decided to stay at Michigan. And then the rest is history. So to say, if I would have used the transfer portal, even though I could have transferred then, you know, with a guy like Greg letting me know, and you know, don't forget, Kev, each player's situation is very different, and they have to
100%.
Judge it. Yeah, and they have to judge it by the uniqueness of their situation. Mine was more so, I was young still. I still had my whole career ahead of me, and it was just a matter of making sure that I understood what I was up against and then utilizing everything in my power to change the outcome, which I did, and which is why I eventually won the Heisman.
And the rest is history, and now you're number 21, retired at Michigan as you're a legendary Wolverine. And, you know, when we talk about the state of college football now, I'm a fan of the transfer portal for one reason. If a situation where a coach leaves, you should have the options too. And you should be able to say, okay, listen, I kind of want to experience the idea that if a coach can leave when he wants to leave, then – why should I be locked in and not look at my options because I came to the school for a coach? But when we look at certain instances, like, for example, UConn this week, I think they're at the taping this podcast, 19 kids in the transfer portal from UConn. What do you think of this transfer portal? Because we kids have been transferring for years, for decades, but now it's more public with this portal and the conversation. What do you make of the transfer portal right now in the state of college football?
Well, Kev, I think that, you know, you, like I said, you have to judge each situation by the individual's, you know, circumstances. I'm on the fence right now. Obviously, you look at the three of the four college football playoff teams, they're being led by kids who are in the transfer portal. I mean, Joe Burrow, he transferred from Ohio State to LSU. Jalen Hurts, he transferred from Alabama to Oklahoma. And, of course, Justin Fields, he transferred from Georgia to Ohio State. And so those are tremendous success stories. But the portal is getting overloaded. I mean, it's just too many guys in the portal. And you have to look at why are a lot of these kids transferring. I think they're giving up on themselves too soon. And I think they're giving up on their programs too soon because there are just way, way too many guys in the portal. I remember talking to Joey Galloway one day. He was like, man, there's over like 1,500 kids in the transfer portal. That was like, that's what really opened my mind up to the fact that, wow, okay, you know, it's just a double-edged sword. It's good in some situations, but not in others. And so when you have guys just bouncing around, you know, they're just really destroying their own college careers, their college futures like that. You have to judge it on an individual basis. I don't know what rules or any type of stipulations they can put in place to try to help these kids. But I do like the fact, like you mentioned earlier, that if it evens the playing field with what happens with coaches, like you say, coaches, they can leave a school and go to another school and they don't really have any penalties. As a matter of fact, you know, it depends on what happens. If they, some coaches, if they get fired or whatever the case may be, they still get a buyout. Like they get billions of dollars for not even coaching there anymore. So anything that, you know, obviously, before the transfer portal, and there's still some you know, stipulations to it, you just automatically had to sit out a year. You know, hey, if you transfer from this school to that school, one FBS school to another FBS school, you automatically have to sit out that next season. Well, now it seems like, hey, there are kids who, if you transfer, you still can play the next season. So I'm all for that. Anything that kind of evens the playing field, especially for the student athletes, I'm all for that. But let's not abuse this system.
Let's talk a little bit about the playoff now. And obviously we've got two more weeks to dissect and get a little bit deeper. But I wanted to get your quick thoughts on the committee having LSU jump over Ohio State. Who was your number one seed coming into Sunday before the rankings came out after everything you saw?
I thought it was LSU, and I thought it was LSU for quite some weeks. I was actually surprised the week that the selection committee jumped Ohio State over LSU that week. I thought it was ill-timed. I thought it made absolutely no sense. And Rob Mullen's explanation was very was hollow. It had no substance to it because it just that week that Ohio State actually jumped LSU was the same week that Ohio State struggled, if you can say they struggled, was the only time we really saw them struggle on the field at that point, and that was against Penn State. So they were at home, playing Penn State. Penn State's quarterback got knocked out of the game. A backup came in and led Penn State back into the game, scored 17 points in the third quarter against this defense that at that point was one of the top defenses in all the FBS. And I was in the shoe, and that whole stadium was quiet because this was the first time they saw their team, you know, have to deal with some adversity. So Ohio State ended up winning that game, but they won by like an 11-point margin. Before that, they were blowing people out by like 40 points a game. And that same weekend, LSU, I believe, played Arkansas and blew Arkansas out. And so then Rob Mullins get on here on TV and talks about, well, we thought that, you know, they've been the better team, the more complete team. That was the word they used, complete team. I said, was there a more complete team performance of domination in the LSU versus Arkansas game or Ohio State versus Penn State, which, you know, they didn't pull away until like the fourth quarter. It was only 11 points. So it just didn't even add up, didn't make sense. And I thought that LSU's resume, when you stack it up against the teams that they beat and you compare them to the teams Ohio State beat, I think there's no comparison. There was never a comparison. So when we did game day at the SEC championship game that morning, I told everybody, everyone on the panel thought that Ohio State, even after the championship game, so meaning Ohio State beats Wisconsin in the championship game, Big Ten championship game, and LSU beats Georgia in the SEC championship game, which team should be number one? And most everyone picked Ohio State except me. I said, no, that's absolutely insane. You tell me they come here and beat the number 14 in a championship game, and they don't deserve to jump Ohio State? I said, that's ludicrous. So anyway, the selection committee, they agreed with me. LSU hit Georgia in the face with a cast iron skillet that afternoon, and they jumped Ohio State and became the number one team in the college football playoff rankings.
And now we see the matchup, of course, LSU versus Oklahoma, Ohio State versus Clemson. I know you're going to go to the Fiesta Bowl because game day will be there for the Fiesta Bowl. And game day this weekend is going to be in Philly, Army-Navy. And that's a great environment, great experience. I think it's one of the best games when you talk about the pageantry all around, the experience and the environment where the records, like it's a very cliche line where the records don't matter, but in a game like this, they really don't matter. There's so much on the line here outside of the records when these two teams face. For you, this is what, year 14 for game day? And, you know, you've seen the transitions, you've seen the changes, you've seen the additions. What's your favorite thing and your favorite experience about game day each and every Saturday?
Wow. The favorite thing is the different atmospheres that we engage in every Saturday. I think that's my favorite thing because each atmosphere has its own flavor, its own type of energy. And this one is very unique because it's Army, Navy. You know, last week it was the SEC championship game. So when you travel around and you go to these different areas, these different games, these different regions, even if it's a college campus or not, there's always just a different energy that comes with being in these different locations, and that's what makes it special. I mean, so we went, like, you know, this past season game day, we did a show in Orlando at week zero. You know, we were at Disney, so that was special. That was like unique, just so rare. Never did it before. We went to South Dakota State. Incredible turnout right there. Went to Minnesota to see P.J. Fleck and his guys row the boat. You know, so going to, like, these places for the first time, that's always special. Went to Memphis. We were on Beale Street. That was outstanding. It's just, like I said, and each one has, like, its own particular, a different type of flavor. So that's always the best for me.
And by the way, I may have misspoke on where you guys are going. I'm already your planner. You may be at the Peach. You may be at the Fiesta. It hasn't been announced. So I don't mean to make assumptions that you guys are going to Fiesta. I know I'm going to Fiesta, but I don't want to make any assumptions that you guys are going to Fiesta. Problem. You could be in Atlanta, so don't panic, LSU fans. You could be game day could be in Atlanta as well.
No doubt.
Exactly. Spoke on that. So help me understand too this, because we've had this is the Herb Streak Pollock podcast, and we talk to the game day crew whenever we have somebody on, and they give us the experience and the vibe, but I always want to know what's the one thing. I mean, you mentioned Memphis. Memphis looked amazing. The Disney World thing looked awesome. Is there one venue and one Saturday that stands out in your time that you're like, whoa, this is the coolest game day I think ever?
Wow. I can pick, oh man, to pick just one. It would be really, really tough because, you know, once you think you have that experience and another one comes and outdoes that one. I think it all started for me with North Dakota State when we went there. This is when Carson Wentz was the quarterback there. And, man, they were just rolling. And this was a very unique setting because we were in Fargo. We were downtown as opposed to being on a college campus. But, you know, we couldn't have received a greater welcome. And the people came out and just masses, and they were everywhere. As far as the human eye could see, was a mass of humanity. And then, you know, a few years later, we go to Pullman, you know, Washington State. Go there, and it was just an incredible turnout with just their flags, their Cougar flags everywhere. And so it's just really hard to pick just one because once you think, you know, hey, man, this is the best, and then, you know, you have a totally – different and unique and special experience in another location. So that's really, really hard to pin just one, you know, but my favorite is going to Ann Arbor. Doesn't get any better than that for me.
Well, trust me, I notice that smile is a little bit bigger every time you're there. And the jacket is a little bit thicker every time you go there, considering. Exactly. What's it like working with Herb Street and Pollock and Reese and Coach Corso? You guys look like you have a ton of fun. I know your family, but you have such a unique perspective considering that you've been there for nearly, you know, a decade and a half.
Yeah. It's been a wonderful experience for me because don't forget, like, you know, when I started, it was Fowler as the host and then Herb Street and Corso, and they had like such wonderful chemistry. My whole goal was just don't mess the chemistry up because they have something special going. And I was able to add to that without messing it up, without disrupting it. And then not only add, but then watch it grow to now where it is today. And so, like I said, you know, it's a 3-hour live show now. Before, when I joined it, I think the show was maybe a 90-minute show. So to be a part of that growth is special, and it's you know, you have a great not only working relationship but a great friendship with guys like, you know, with Kirk. You know, Kirk's my guy. Corso, absolutely love that old man. He's the best, and you know, so it's wonderful. And then Reese has stepped in, and he's been tremendous. I mean, how lucky are we? It's like the Packers going from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, you know, for us to go from Chris Fowler now to Reese Davis. I mean, how lucky are we as a show? So it's been great.
That's a phenomenal analogy, and that's where we will end this. Des, we appreciate the time. Thanks for the stories, man. And we'll be thinking about you tomorrow night when we watch Joe Burrow win the Heisman. And the question will be how much the margin is. And enjoy the Philadelphia experience, and of course, enjoy tomorrow night in New York City.
Yes, sir, my friend. Thank you for having me, man. I'm going to enjoy your city. I know you're a Philly guy, so I'm going to enjoy your city, my man.
I'll send you some places to go. And by the way, keep it clean, man. You're the best dressed guy on game day. You know that. I always send you those texts.
I'm just trying to keep up with you, man. Trying to keep up with you.
Bro, you are casket sharp every Saturday morning, my man.
So are you, man. It means a lot coming from you. So thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
More Heisman talk coming your way. We're going to get to more of the historical perspective from Ivan Maisel. But first, let's hear from Allstate and Dr. Pepper.
Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today.
Make sure to tune in to my new favorite TV show, Fansville, presented by Dr. Pepper, returning every Saturday throughout the college football season during the commercials. Fansville is the only show that stars Dr. Pepper, puts the spotlight on fans, and perfectly captures the emotional roller coaster that is the college football season. Critics are saying it's good, fantastic. Is anyone else thirsty? And literally the best thing since Diet Dr. Pepper and Dr. Pepper Cherry. In Fansville, Dr. Pepper delivers a tour de force performance alongside legendary college football co-stars Brian the Boz Bosworth and Eddie George. Experience the pain, the passion, and the deliciousness of college football fandom this fall on Fansville, presented by Dr. Pepper. So pull over, veer right, slant left. Do what you gotta do to get to your local store and pick up some refreshing ice cold Dr. Pepper, the official drink of Fansville. And hey, while you're at it, don't be afraid to go for two.
Always great to have ESPN senior writer Ivan Mazel joining us here on the College Football Podcast. And we just talked to Desmond Howard, the 1991 Heisman winner, about this specific topic here as we head into Saturday night. Coming into the season, Ivan, it was Trevor Lawrence and Tua Tagovailoa, and it was their award who was going to win, right? And they're not going to be there in New York. Jonathan Taylor was the top running back. He's not going to be in New York. And who do we have? We got three transfer quarterbacks who found the perfect fit. You know, we have a once-in-a-generation dominant defensive end who in the middle of the season had a breakthrough, you know, publicly. I think everybody who follows college football knew how good Chase Young was, but publicly it felt like he had a Heisman moment against Wisconsin. And then you got Justin Fields, 50 total touchdowns and one pick. Any other year, maybe he wins. You have Jalen Hurts, who has maybe the greatest 30 for 30 story in the history of 30 for 30 when it's ever made. But it's Joe Burrow who's going to win in a landslide. I can never, looking back, I can never recall a Heisman race like this. I mean, when you look back, can you compare this Heisman race, what we're going to see Saturday night, to anything you've seen?
I keep thinking about Troy Smith in 2006 when it was a guy who, at the beginning of the season, only his mama and daddy knew who he was, more or less. And then, you know, at the end of the year, everybody knew who he was. I think you did skim over one important point, is that evidently you now have to be a transfer quarterback to win the Heisman. This will be the third year in a row. And there may be something to that, actually. But that might have disqualified Trevor and Tua to begin with. Yeah, I don't understand why Fields got no traction. I think in an odd sort of way, the dominance of Ohio State, so thoroughly every week, almost worked against him. You know, I don't even know if that makes sense, but I feel like we didn't really take his numbers all that seriously because they were so good. It was clearly the team was so much better than everybody else. And with Burrow, there was something palpable, a palpable difference to sink your teeth into. This LSU team was different because Joe Brady came in and utilized Joe Burrow's physical skills and what's between his ears and his quick ability, his quick thinking to make a huge difference in the way LSU played offense. And that, you know, the storyline is irresistible too. So there were a lot of things, I think, working in Joe Burrow's favor.
Are you surprised in a year where he's so dominant that we will have four guys that deserve to be invited, but that we will have four guys there for the ceremony?
I think that might be reflective of there was no clear cut runner up. The accountants look at the vote totals Monday evening when the polling closes, and they just somehow decide, you know, whatever math they use to determine who the also-rans that are going to be invited are, they decided that there were three guys close enough to merit bringing them up to New York. I think that's strictly a math deal. And it's got to be more than one. You can't do a 60-minute show with one guy.
Yeah. So
there's got to be. I mean, we all know who's going to win, but there's got to be somebody else to fill in some airtime. So that's why those guys are coming up. And it's nice to celebrate guys who also had very good seasons as well.
I'm in complete agreement with you, who have great seasons, and I think you can make a case any other year that the other three would be the guy. There is one discussion that we had with Desmond Howard here where in 1991 he gave us the Heisman moment, right? The moment that I think when people think about the Heisman moment, they go to Desmond Howard against Ohio State. Does that concern you when we talk about Justin Fields, right? About that you need a Heisman moment. Like Burrow gave us a Heisman moment against, you know, his performance against Bama in the second half, and then what he did against Georgia in that run for 71 yards with the pass after he's being chased, by three guys in the backfield by the Dogs. Like, again, I'm guilty of it because I'm part of the coverage, and you're like, oh, that's the moment, right? But Justin Fields, when you look at Ohio State, Chase Young gave us his moment against Wisconsin in the regular season. J.K. Dobbins gave us a moment with his four touchdowns against Michigan. But, you know, Justin Fields had four touchdowns as well. Justin Fields against Michigan. Justin Fields also gave us a moment where he hurt his, you know, got hurt with the knee, comes out with the brace, rolls out in first play, throws a 30-yard touchdown pass. But are you concerned that some of these players and the way voters look at things, they say, well, do we have a moment yet? I mean, look at the numbers. The numbers are great. But what exactly is his moment for me to put him over the top?
I am not concerned about that, Kevin, and maybe because I don't think that way when I vote. You know, I don't seize on a Heisman moment. And I would be curious to know how many voters are covering games and how many are watching games, you know, and watching you and all of our colleagues on Saturdays. Because if you're in a press box, you don't see as much. You know, you see one game, you see everything, but everybody else, you only see, you're grabbing bits and pieces. And, I don't know that there's anybody's ever done a study or if it's possible. You know, there's so much, to me, there should be so much concern about the way the Heisman is voted upon. I think there's too many voters. But the bottom line is, if you're covering college football, odds are you are not home watching television and seeing those Heisman moments. You are in a press box somewhere or in traffic trying to get to or from the press box. So, I think that's more of a public thing, honestly.
And then how do we consume that information, though? I think many times if you're in a press box, you're also checking Twitter, right? You're checking social media.
Well, maybe you're right, yeah.
And you have those, like, 30-second highlights, right? Such and such did this on this play, and you're like, wow, right? And many of those are wow moments instead of, hey, he's consistently good in this game. Right?
Yeah, no, I get, I, I, I'm not dismissing your point. I think there might be something to it. And I think it kind of goes back to what I was saying. He was so smoothly, it was just so smooth with him, and there was never any one, I guess I am, you know, in the end, I'm saying the same thing you are. There was never one, oh my God, game with him. It was just a consistently dominant performance. You know, I kind of looked at it that they were just so dominant that you couldn't really pin it to one guy. And I think that's why neither he nor Dobbins really ever came to the forefront of the Heisman discussion. They sort of traded off as who was the bell cow of that Ohio State offense. You know, Chase Young was so brilliant in what he did in the first two-thirds of the season that obviously he got that attention. But, you know, maybe if it had been just Dobbins or just Fields, there would have been one.
Ivan, how does help me understand, too, the role of the SID and the role of the university when it comes to promoting a guy? You know, we've seen preseason hoopla, and I know, you know, when snail mail was the thing, you'd see stuff in the preseason. You get these, like, great little intricate packages to push a guy, or you'd see a big billboard like we saw years ago in Times Square, I think, with what was it, Mariota or Harrington, with Oregon pushing somebody. What is the role that and the influence that a campaign can have, like from a school, from an SID, from a university?
Well, the year that Washington State mailed out envelopes with a leaf in them for Ryan Leaf, I really wanted Kentucky to do that because they were pushing Tim Couch, but it didn't happen. The role now, I think, you know, the best thing an SID can do is make his player available to us, to the media, to the networks, to the writers. And some kids are not comfortable with that. Some kids don't want to do that. I think Jalen Hurts, who is notoriously reticent to be interviewed and humble to the point that he will not toot his own horn, that might have cost him. I don't think it cost him as much as the late season turnovers, but I think that cost him a little bit because he's got such a, his story, we're all fascinated by his story, and he's just not been all that interested in telling it. That would not have made up the difference between him and Burrow. I think the best thing that's happened to the Heisman over the last 10 to 20 years is that it has become much more performance-based than it used to be. You know, when it was still more of a publicity, who can get their story out the best. I think now, because of the information explosion, and we're much more, we analyze data a lot more than we used to, I think it's gone a lot more to performance.
Do you still, or do you, I shouldn't say still, do you view it as a quarterback award? And, you know, when we see three quarterbacks there and Chase Young, he's a guy who's getting the quarterback. And he's an anomaly, right? Because you don't often see that, but you can't ignore how great of a talent he is and what he has done despite missing two games. Do you view this as a quarterback award?
Well, I view it as a numbers award, and we're not sophisticated enough as voters to, nor do we have the ability or time to analyze all the video of all the teams to determine who the single, you know, which player is going, has done the best job at one of the 22 positions. So we are going to drift toward numbers. And, you know, Chris Felica, our colleague, makes this point that it, you know, we're all slaves to data. And that has been to the detriment of anybody who isn't a running back or a quarterback. And in this era, offenses more than they ever have revolve around the quarterback, in the RPO era. You know, we've got so many quarterbacks who run the ball, and become that 11th player, that a defense has to account for. I think it's more, you know, offenses ebb and flow, and someday we're going to go back to more predominant running game, and running backs will come in, but it's going to be a stats thing. It always has been.
What would you tweak? You mentioned there's too many voters. What else would you tweak when you look at the, it's over 900 ballots go out, right? Where does that number need to come down in your mind?
Well, I think especially in what has happened to our business, to journalism, over the span of my career. I think there was a time when it was easy to find 145 media members in six different regions who actively cover college football. Now I think that might be a little more problematic, and I don't know who votes, and the Heisman is not, they don't brandish the identity of the voters. It might be publicly available. They don't, I've never seen that list. I would like to think if they are somehow screening the voters and not telling us, then I think they need to explain how they're screening the voters, because we've all got stories, Kevin, of colleagues or fellow voters who we know aren't paying attention. You know, when I worked at the Dallas Morning News back in the Stone Age, I had colleagues on the paper who had votes and would walk over to my desk in late November and say, "Who should I vote for?" You know, and I'm thinking, "Oh, okay, why do you have a vote?" You know, so I think my assumption is that there's still some of that going on.
So last night on SportsCenter, I had the honor. I host the Walter Camp Football Foundation dinner next month, and I had the honor to make the announcement on SportsCenter on who's going to win the award given to the top player in the country, and it was Joe Burrow. And Joe was on SportsCenter before the Home Depot College Football Award show last night, and he was on SportsCenter with me, and I asked him a question about when did he know this season was going to be special for him and this offense. And he surprised me. He said that he knew at the end of last season, like he just knew it was going to be different. Because he's like, I look at the receivers that were coming back and I just had this confidence. When you look at Joe Burrow, and I had an LSU friend text me saying he has changed the course of so many people's lives. And you sit there and you sit back and you're like, wow, he's playing football and he went undefeated and lives were changed because of that. What kind of impact do you think when we look back that Burrow will have because of this season on LSU and people in college football?
Well, that speaks, I guess what that is alluding to is the passion that we all have for the sport, and especially seems to exist in the SEC footprint. Joe Burrow did not make the decision to open up that offense. He was just the tool that Ed Orgeron and then Joe Brady used to open up that offense. But the fun and the beauty of college football is that we invest so much in these kids and these teams and they become so important to our daily existence and so important to our collective memory. I couldn't help but think, we're getting ready to, Ryan McGee and I are going to do the annual memoriam podcast that we've done the last few years. And the one thing I keep thinking about, Kevin, is that three Heisman winners died this year.
Joe Bellino, Hopalong Cassidy, and recently Pat Sullivan. And that's an unusual number. But as you go over their lives and their great games, there are people who still remember the magic that those guys had in those seasons. And I think that speaks exactly to the lure of this sport and the passion that we all have for it.
Ivan, of course, you know, this is the postseason awards week and conversation with recruiting next week, but also during this part of the off season in college football before bowl season begins is the coaching moves. And we see a lot of, you know, assistants going somewhere, head coaches going somewhere, and transitions happening. But of course, the big one is Lane Kiffin returning to the SEC. And he's already on the recruiting trail for Ole Miss because you got that window before next week's period ends on Wednesday. What's your first thoughts on Lane Kiffin coming back to the SEC on his redemption tour?
My first thought is, thank God. You know, I mean, this was not a coaching hiring season where big jobs came open. We were all watching Clay Helton and USC stayed put, which I thought was the right thing to do, but that so rarely means anything. And I guess Chris Peterson, it was a big deal, but the way Washington handled it by promoting Jimmy Lake, there was, you know, it was not a drawn out thing. It was one press conference. So Lane gave us the drama and excitement that we all want this time of year when these kind of things happen. And he was as, pro forma, he was up to the task because that's what he does. you know, the question we all want to know is has he matured and as he gets this, fifth bite of the apple as a head coach, is this going to be the one that, that works? Ole Miss is a tough job historically. It's a tough job, just looking at the data, you know, of how much talent is in a, you know, that state. And you got two schools fighting over it, not to mention Alabama's traditionally made great raids into the state of Mississippi. So that's a tough job, and it's going to be a real measure of his ability to cope with a lot of things against him to see if he succeeds there.
We know the talent. We know that he's going to be a great recruiter, and that offense is going to be a lot of fun at Ole Miss. I'd like to fast forward to the Egg Bowl already because I kind of want to see where Ole Miss is and the Mississippi State environment in that Egg Bowl when you just throw in a little bit of Lane Kiffin because I think that's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it will be fun, and I kind of wish – along those lines, I wish Dan Mullen was still at Mississippi State, you know, because he's Dan is so combative and, you know, we don't really know what Mississippi State looks like. They're teetering a little bit. So, you know, I think most of the focus on Lane is not going to be at the end of the season in the Egg Bowl. It's going to be early in the season when they, you know, when they play Alabama and he gets to go against Nick Saban, the guy who ran him off. And although they both have very nice things to say about one another, which is the way Nick always handles these things, I'm sure there's great stories to be told behind the scenes.
I'll be looking forward to Lane's Twitter account and what he tweets the week he faces Saban and Bama. Ivan, always great to have you. Look forward to next week when Ryan McGee is going to join you and your conversation will be here on the College Football Podcast with Herb Street and Pollock.
Thanks.
Thank you to Desmond Howard for joining us here and to share his experience of Heisman weekend for him back in 1991. It was great reliving this story of his Heisman moment
And of course, great to have Ivan Maisel joining us here for his perspective, especially when we look at the history of the Heisman and down the road, what tweaks may need to be added. Also want to thank our sponsors, Allstate and Dr. Pepper. Always great work from our producer, Taylor Schwenk. If you enjoy this podcast and you want more, all you have to do is subscribe to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. And of course, remember to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. By the way, if you have a question, you want to hear it on the podcast for Herbie or Pollock, tweet using the hashtag CFBpod. The best ones will make the podcast, and we hope you enjoy the weekend.